Dunkin's Reddit podcast.
Marcus Smart is so good.
Hello and welcome to the Celtics Reddit podcast. My name is Ben Vallis. Thank you for joining us. Hope you're doing well. The Celtics barely defeat the T-Wolves 145-136 in a game that felt like it went on forever. We're going to get to the game in a sec and a little bit later, the Celtics Reddit recap. Joining us for all of that and more, Jackson, aka Brickman Lives. Jackson, how's it going?
I'm all right, man, considering very stressful last couple of hours, but all good, all good. It's a nice weekend here in Australia, so enjoying it up.
Things are looking up with the eventual win there today from the Seas. And look, back from his trip from Maui. Aloha, Larbird 33. Welcome back, sir. How's things?
Aloha.
Good. It was good to get away. Good to spend some time on the beach, hanging out over there. But good to be back, too.
Any highlights from the trip at all while you're away, other than listening to this podcast?
Oh, you know what? Like, as far as the Celtics go, I only got to catch maybe two quarters of basketball, and it was Evan Fournier going like 10 for 10. So I've still yet to see him actually miss a shot. But from a Hawaii perspective, I mean, we made the most of it. You know, everyone was, they're still having, you know, social distancing rules over and stuff like that over there. But got to do like a snorkel trip and got to do a, you know, rum tasting and botanical gardens and all sorts of stuff. So nice. It was definitely a lot of fun.
Sounds great, and really, you didn't miss much on the Celtics basketball front. It sounds like you caught the best little snippet that that they exhibited in the time that you were gone. Let's get to this game, shall we? A Reddit user, Rover Mac, wrote in the post-game thread, "I'm honestly very surprised the Celtics managed to win this game. We've got to start with the obvious thing here, Jason Tatum's 53 points. Sean Grande tweeted out that Jason Tatum's 53, it ties for the third highest scoring game in Celtics history." So that's regular season games, obviously. Larry Bird with 60 points in 1985. McHale with 56, also in 1985. Bird with 53 in 83. And then now Tatum, 53, is tied with that Larry Bird performance. So amazing stuff. Jackson, what are your thoughts on this Tatum performance?
It was amazing overall. But like, to be brutally honest, when I was watching it, it didn't feel like it was one of those. Remember when he got real hot in like March last year? He felt like otherworldly then. For some reason, this was, I think maybe just because of the overall situation of the season and the opposition that it was coming against and the manner it was, the way it was playing out, I wasn't really like enjoying it and like basking in it as much as I would have should we have like been blowing them out. But again, if we'd been blowing them out, he would have been taking that out the third quarter with like 38 and wouldn't have got here. So I enjoyed the fact that you know, obviously the score is amazing, but you know, the fact that it was in a win and he kind of put the team on his back too. So I did enjoy that a lot, but I didn't really like, you know, I wasn't celebrating it real hard. I don't know. Did you guys?
No, not really. I mean, I feel like, you know, Tatum scoring 50 plus was inevitable. He was always going to do it at some point, and who better to do it against the woefully terrible Timberwolves. But yeah, it was still great to see. I guess it's like the highest score we've had from a regular season game in 35 plus years. So what's not to like about that? That was pretty awesome. We were talking about in our Slack channel, because IT had 53 in a playoff game, that if he scored 54, maybe he'd break the curse of IT, but he just fell 1 point short. So
does it equal the count?
Let's say it counts.
You still get like the world record for equaling the world record, I'm pretty sure. So let's abide by that. Yeah.
The curse is gone. We're back. But really, though, I mean, there was a point there where I was a little worried that Tatum's post-COVID symptoms were holding him back. And this, in conjunction with the stats they actually brought up in the game, and someone on Reddit brought him up, where he's, I don't have it in front of me, but I think he's like 83% or something since March in within 3 feet. He's actually finishing at the rim really, really well. He got to the line a ton tonight. So, I mean, that's all good signs, because those are the kind of things that you would assume, because of post-COVID, you know, not having the same wind, he wasn't attacking the basket as much. And see him get to a line a bunch, that's great. As we hopefully make the playoffs and he hits his stride, that'd be great.
Yeah, it's been a frustrating season for Tatum fans, Celtics fans, therefore, in that, like, And obviously a lot of it is COVID symptom related, but Tatum hasn't always been getting to the rim consistently, or even like seemingly looking to get to the rim consistently, and often settling for, you know, fadeaway deep twos and threes and whatnot, and not hitting those either. The last couple of games, Tatum really has been sort of decisively driving to the rim and getting there with ease. And it's kind of like, it's crazy. It's like, oh, wow, like you can do that. You can do that really well. And I think Scal even referred to the dunk on LeBron James in game 7 of Tatum's rookie year as well. And like he is driving with that kind of force and getting there. And it's a really nice and probably a timely reminder given how the season's gone so far. Okay, Jason Tatum is really fucking good. And when he's healthy, when he's not winded, like he is very, very good. 16 free throw attempts today, along with the 10 boards and 5 turnovers, which we'll get to a little bit down the line. But just really, really good to see. And yeah, hopefully that curse of IT, 53 equals 53, the key fitting into the lock. I don't know. I'm trying to talk myself into the idea that somehow Tatum scoring 53 helps.
I guess the fact that he started going to the rim like early as well too, and started off well, I think that was key to everything, because I think it's the last few games he's had really, really slow starts and has come alive in like the third or the fourth. So to see him doing it early and consistent, like, I mean, that's a really good sign. You know, he might start doing that more often, and, you know, God, imagine if he didn't, you know, we could have been down by 30 or something. So yeah, that was a good aspect of that, I thought.
Just on the IT side of things, this is posted to the sub by LeetSpeak. Coach Steven says Jason Tatum reminded him tonight of Isaiah Thomas, run with us, in the sense that he just wasn't going to let us lose. Tatum was super special tonight, he added. All right, I'm going to stop talking about the curse of IT now. Should we get to the rest of the game? Because it wasn't all good. It wasn't all just Tatum 50 burger. We needed that 50 points from Tatum tonight. Another Reddit user, Bubsy Boo, wrote on the post-game thread, "We won, yay. Tatum got 50. That was awesome. But can we play some defense, please? They are the worst team in the league," referring to the Wolves there, shaking my head. So, Jackson, talk to me about the defensive performance of the Celtics, or lack thereof, in this particular game, and how that's, I guess, kind of made a trend throughout the season.
Yeah, we've just been so shit at defense for like all season. So even when we fall into this hole, I don't get angry anymore. It's just like I'm expecting it to happen. So yeah, it's alarming. I thought the Timberwolves were hitting a lot of shots, to be fair, but I mean, I'm not sophisticated of a basketball mind enough to know like how much of that do you attribute to just good shooting and how much of that do you take away because of the defense being poor. It's probably consistent with our season that we were just poor defensively, but look, yeah, it was just as well we had, you know, a high scoring game from Tatum. We needed 145 points to win a game. If we do that every week, you know, it'd be infuriating, but I'll be okay with it. But no, I think defensively is just, it's still not there. Maybe when Thompson gets some more rhythms back, like it might tighten up too, but I mean, I don't know. It's just not good, is it?
So much of it seems to be, we talked about it a bit in our Slack there, I guess, but, and we've talked about it for the last, you know, month or two, but so much of it does seem to be lack of practice. Nobody, you know, there's no teams in the NBA that are really practicing like they normally do because it's a condensed season, and they're trying to prioritize people not getting hurt, so they're actually using their days off. But maybe because I'm trying to, like, because the question that keeps coming up is like, why does it impact us more than it impacts any other team? I do think it's partially because we're a really young team. I mean, our stars are very, very young, and not having that practice time must impact them quite a bit. I mean, even Tatum and Brown are making really obvious mistakes. Smart's actually making obvious mistakes too. And that's stuff that you would think that if they had time to actually walk through it and like go over game tape and like actually get reps in and work on that stuff, they'd be able to remedy that. So, you know, we could complain about it a lot. I'm trying to keep optimistic. I got to be honest, I'm pretty bummed out just because of the Fournier thing, him getting COVID. I'm not going to delete my Twitter like Danger Cart, but I'm pretty bummed out about that. But on the positive side, I just keep thinking, you know, as long as we can get to the playoffs, we're only a game out of the fourth seed right now. If we can scramble and actually get that fourth seed, and then presumably with a normal playoff schedule where we have a little more time to actually go through this, I think we could be dangerous. And Ben, you said in one of our group chats that you were feeling a little optimistic. I'm kind of with you. I mean, I do still think that we have a strong, you know, top eight. And once Fournier returns, that's a huge addition. So the defensive stuff sucks, but hopefully we can remedy that. And I'm overall, I'm still keeping an eye towards positive.
Yeah, there was a stretch there, I guess, when Fournier was playing and Tristan Thompson was yet to come back. But like suddenly it kind of looked like we had some depth, and like the first two or three subs off the bench, you were seeing these, you know, these names, faces or whatever coming onto the court. And it's like, oh, there's another competent player. There's another one. It's like suddenly we had a deep enough team where the rotation of players was just like a healthy cycle of decent players. And then I was kind of frothing at the idea of adding, you know, Tristan Thompson to mm-hmm. that rotation as well. We're going to, obviously, like you said, Fournier's out with COVID, it seems. So we're going to have to wait a little bit longer for that. But it is on the horizon. So I think there is some cause for optimism there.
It's just so frustrating. It's so frustrating that like we, you know, we started to see what was the beginning of some momentum, and then it's like, oh well, with the one thing that we've been counting on, another reliable shooter that brings depth to our whole rotation, now he's out. So it's just really frustrating. It's like I just feel like this like weight still on top of us. So it's good to get wins. Like we've actually won what, four of our last six or something. We're winning a couple games here and there. But it is frustrating. It's very frustrating.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, speaking of frustrating, the game today wasn't without its faults. The Wolves won the first quarter 39-25. The Celtics did, thankfully, they had to win every quarter after that. And Tatum scoring kind of bailed the defense out over and over again. I never want to see D'Angelo Russell walk down the lane for an uncontested layup again in my life. I think I almost had a fucking brain aneurysm the 10th time that he did that in this game. Very, very frustrated. Jackson, like where was your head at in this game? Say, like, for example, a couple of minutes into the third quarter, you know, they went into halftime down only 9, so they managed to cut it to single digits. And I think the lead was back up to like 15, 17 a few minutes into the third before they eventually turned it around. Like, where's your head at that point of the game, given what we've seen, you know, all throughout the season and now against the worst team in the league in this game?
Well, I suppose it goes back to what I mentioned earlier about it doesn't anger me anymore when we have these terrible stretches. So I don't know. It's annoying, sure, but I'm just kind of watching it play out. I'm trying to be zen about it. But there was one play one sequence that came to mind. I'm not going to be able to remember it very clearly, but I think it was a stop, a bucket, a stop, and then Jaylen Brown like tried to find Marcus Smart in the corner, like a behind the back pass. Yeah. Just picked off, and then they went down. They hit a three immediately, and I'm just like, this has been happening all game, and this is just so like just typical. It's just I don't see us like breaking this cycle. So there's a little bit of resignation around that, but. I mean, the way Tatum was scoring, I thought we have a chance here. So it was a little cause for optimism, I guess. And again, it was the Timberwolves. I was sure that they would go to shit at some stage. And they kind of did, like, to a degree. But yeah, it wasn't, I was cautiously optimistic, probably put it that way, sure.
A loss against the Timberwolves would have been actually kind of predictable, though.
Horrendous.
Like, I kind of thought, like, well, if you're going to lose to a team, of course you're going to lose to the Timberwolves. So I'm almost more surprised that we actually beat them. It's weird. It's like, oh, we actually won. Okay, great.
Yeah.
Would you guys agree that that would have been the new low point of the season? If we, you know, Tatum scores 50 or whatever it ended up being, and we still lose to the Timberwolves, I don't think it gets much worse than that.
Yeah. I would have probably reconciled it by saying, like, Towns out for a lot this season, so like with him back there, probably a bit better than their record might suggest, but still, sure. No, it would have been pretty terrible. It would have been one of those ones that like kind of ruins you, not your weekend, but definitely your day. So I was staring down that prospect. Yeah. That didn't happen, luckily.
Yeah, we'd be like, Anthony Edwards is not the same as he was earlier in the season either. It's like,
clearly front runner.
Yeah. We should have got Rubio, goddammit.
The energy, thankfully, it did seem to pick up in the third quarter after Kemba was teed up for reacting to the foul call where he fouled Anthony Edwards' hair.
Yeah,
which was a bizarre, but this was a weird game. Like, there were some weird techs, like Tatum got that tech for like bouncing the ball while I don't think he was making any eye contact with the referee at that point. And then this Kemba, you know, rare technical foul for Kemba, just having sort of a moment of reactionary anger there. But then thankfully that sort of geared up the team or fired them up for whatever reason. And shortly after that, Kemba goes to the bench. Peyton Pritchard comes in with 3.5 minutes left in the third. And that's really when the momentum swung back in Boston's favor. I want to stop there and talk about Kemba Walker because I guess, you know, we'll start with you, Lad, but I'm curious. You've always been, I don't want to say a Kemba Walker apologist because he's not at that level of bad yet, but like I find it more and more difficult to find reasons to like his impact to the team. So how do you feel about Kemba Walker from this game and the last few games, I guess?
Well, I didn't watch a lot of those games while I was on vacation, but in general, I think I'm higher on him than the majority of Celtics fans, but I'm still lower on him than majority of Celtics fans were last season. I mean, because I've always felt like he was a little bit overrated, and then he doesn't seem remarkably different than that I always saw him as. And there's a lot of you know, fans on Reddit who have made valid points and disagree with me on that a lot, saying he used to be able to attack the basket a lot better, and I hear you on that. But to me, I mean, if you look at his stats, at least if you just ignored his first 10 games of the season and look at his stats since then, it's damn near identical to his career stats. He's the same player statistically he's the same player that he's always been. It's just that he's now not the number one option. He's the third option on this team. And I've never really, I mean, we talked about this a lot too, but I've never really saw him as an ideal third option. He was a great option to bring in to fill in for Kyrie once he left. You know, he gives you maybe 70, 75% of what Kyrie gave with none of the headaches. But now that now we have Tatum, who's, you know, dropping 50 plus and Brown's able to get 40 plus. I don't see Kemba as an ideal complementary player to those guys. So yeah, I exist in this weird kind of limbo where I'm not really too down on him or never have been that high on him. I still think he could be a huge, huge part of the playoffs if we make the playoffs. I think people are maybe underrating him a bit, if that makes sense. So yeah, it's like a weird thing. It's like I always feel like he's been overrated, but right now he's underrated.
Right. Yes. Yeah, we can't get it right.
I can't make up my mind whether he's overrated or underrated after that. It's unclear. But for me, he'll get a pass for this game purely because he hit a couple of big shots, particularly in overtime. Mm-hmm. And it is at the stage where you can see him go three quarters just being like terrible, but then hit some shots when it matters. So provided he's able to do that whilst we're getting like fantastic levels of production, particularly from Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown or anyone else for that matter, Fournier. But for those buckets alone, I'll be okay with his contribution. But I mean, yeah, for the most part, it was like stands out a lot when he doesn't hit shots because he doesn't really bring that much else to the table, unfortunately. So, I still think we're better with him than without him, like without doubt.
Yeah, I still kind of wonder if Kemba, this is something that, it used to sound really crazy, and now it seems like I think people would be on board with it a little bit. But Kemba is the sixth man. If you brought in Fournier into the starting lineup and you had Smart, Brown, Fournier, Tatum, Time Lord with Kemba off the bench as a sixth man, I kind of like that. I don't think they'd ever do it. It's just we're still paying him ridiculous amounts of money. But I like the idea of him as like a microwave off the bench and you just let him do his thing. But yeah.
Well, we'll have a back-to-back sooner or later where you probably will play that lineup to start with, and we'll see how it goes.
Just on Kemba's stat line today, it's sort of surprisingly decent. Like, he finished a plus 10 somehow while being terrible defensively, 17 points, you know, he had 4 turnovers, a couple of steals, but then, you know, 9 assists and 7 boards, sort of mildly flirting with a triple-double there. I think he, like, in this game at least, he was maybe 2 made shots away from seeming or actually being a lot better. 5 of 14 from the floor, 3 of 10 from three. So if he hits 2 more shots, suddenly 7 for 14 is 50%. He's 5 of 10 from 3, 50%. He missed a couple too many of those sort of above the break, you know, the high pick and roll where he comes off that high pick and pulls up for a three. That's kind of always been his signature shot, and he's just not hitting that consistently enough to feel like a positive contributor, especially with the money that, you know, he's being paid. So so close to actually being decent in this game, but just fell short, unfortunately. And you know, because of the money that he's getting paid, there's that spotlight on him. He's going to continue to cop some criticism there. So getting to the rest of the game though, guys, what else was notable to you from this game?
I thought it was actually a really good Marcus Smart game, to be perfectly honest. Shot the ball pretty well. Normally it's a bad omen when he scores pretty well, but that wasn't the case tonight. Put himself about, had a very vintage Marcus Smart play where he saved it like between his legs to Jaylen Brown. That was awesome. But yeah, he was standing out as one of the key reasons that we kind of stayed or were able to just like grind our way through it when it was difficult was definitely Marcus.
Yeah, it was a great game from Marcus Smart. I wish I could remember who said this. I was actually trying to look it up, but someone was saying something like Marcus Smart is always kind of teetering between deciding if he wants to be an amazing role player or fail as a star. And this is one of those games where like he put up star numbers. It's one of those games where in actually the last couple of games he's put up sort of star numbers, but he's never actually going to be a star. It's just always a weird thing because I don't love it when he's scoring 20 plus because I don't feel like that should ever really be his role.
Yeah.
He should always be kind of, you know, playing hard defense and distributing and all that, but he should never be one of our top, you know, shot takers or playmakers. That should never really be his role. So it's good when he scores 20 plus, obviously it helps us, but the law of averages over time, that's going to mean there's going to be games where he's just dreadful scoring the ball, and that really shouldn't be his role. So I always have conflicted feelings when I see him put up big numbers. It's like, great, great numbers, but he shouldn't be doing that, Marcus. That's not you. That's not who you are.
If I ever don't see a Celtics game and I check the box score and Marcus Smart's like an 8, 7, and a 4, I know he had a great game.
Right.
And I don't think about that for anyone else. Since I look at, yeah, like, yeah, he must have done well.
Yeah, yeah. And the field goal attempts as well for Smart. Like, he had 12 field goal attempts. I think that's just a little high. Like, maybe, you know, we're talking about the margins with the Kemba's numbers as well, but 10 or fewer, I think 8 field goal attempts for Marcus Smart is kind of the sort of the magic number there. And it kind of allows him to reserve his impact on the game for other facets of his overall skill set. 12 is a little high, but hey, like he was integral to the win today and helped the team get it done. So no complaints there. Time Lord. I've got him. I've just written down Time Lord dominated by Naz Reid. kind of had his soul like exercised by Joel Embiid in the Sixers game. And Time Lord, poor old Rob Williams just hasn't really been the same since then. Like, there were stretches of this game where Naz Reid was just absolutely like posting and toasting and just dominating him. Like, he looked like prime Karl Malone or something. It was nuts. What did you guys think of Time Lord in this game?
All I remember are the two missed dunks early on, and that was like a bad sign. I thought he's normally like so money with that. He had one good, I think, alley-oop in the fourth, but yeah, largely forgettable, which is very uncommon for him. Williams normally, like, he's out there, there's at least two times where you're like, whoa, shit, and there was like zero this time. Well, that one play that I mentioned, but that was like it. So not disappointing.
He started our season as our third string big, and the whole time we were hoping that he'd come and actually, you know, move up the ranks and eventually take that starting lineup, and he has, which is awesome. And for the most part, he's been great. I really love what I'm seeing from Time Lord. I do think that go back a week or so after he had that, I guess, 20-point, 8-assist, 9-rebound performance, I was checking out the subreddit, and people were like, there was a couple threads that were like, oh, he's our third best player now. It's like, well, calm down. Like, listen.
He was for a day.
Yeah, I mean, he's good. He's good. And what, you know, I still see him as, like, hopefully becoming, like, our Clint Capella. But let's calm down. Just one game doesn't mean he's our third best player. So I do think that maybe he, I guess if you're playing the stock market, he just shot right up. And now he's kind of going down and kind of settling. But where he's settling at is a starting caliber big, I think, at least in the modern NBA. That doesn't mean you can stop someone like Embiid, but for the most part, he's still doing great things. He had 5 assists, 2 blocks tonight. That's good. I mean, that's what you want from him, and rebounding his blocks and getting alley-oops and all that kind of stuff. And for the most part, he's been really good.
Yeah, absolutely. Great fantasy player, too. Shout out to all the NBA fantasy players out there. Time Lord, he's part of my ongoing dynasty for the foreseeable future. I mean, there are other aspects of this game to discuss. I don't know if I could be bothered. I'm kind of emotionally exhausted by this. It was kind of, I was really struggling with the concept of losing to the Wolves and kind of spoiling Tatum's 50-piece nuggets. So I'm still recovering from like even just the notion of that happening. I suppose we should mention Jaylen Brown. He had a pretty decent game, you know, 26 points, very efficient, 60% from the floor. Again, 5 turnovers. So he and Tatum had 10 turnovers between them. So definitely something to work on there. But it's kind of a trend throughout the whole team. So I wouldn't necessarily just finger point or nitpick on those two. A few assists there. The bro assist as well to Tatum at the very end of the game. Probably should have held the ball because then, you know, run some more clock out. We don't risk that terrible ending to the fourth quarter that we saw with the banked in three from D'Angelo Russell there. But yeah, bro assisted to Tatum to allow him to get his 48th point at that point in the game. So I thought that was pretty nice to JB. Grant Williams as well had that insane diving out of bounds, saving the ball, apparently like knocked someone over. Which immediately had me thinking, what are the rules there if you come into literal contact with someone, you know, in like a fan in the arena? Shouldn't they be sort of quarantining you? Or I don't know, did that come across your minds at all?
It's a good point. I hadn't thought about it, but yeah.
Yeah. This is how neurotic I was throughout the whole game. Yeah.
Every fan is wearing a mask from what I could tell. But I mean, yeah, you're still like touching them. It's like, so I'm not too sure. I'm not too sure. It's interesting.
Yeah, I guess one good thing about having by far the most COVID shutdowns is that we were unlikely to have that many in the playoffs. So it's like at least our best players already been, and, you know, he's got the immunity and Marcus Smart's got the immunity. And if 48 can come back, we know. So we got a starting lineup of guys who've already had COVID at this point. It's pretty nice.
Yeah. Everything's
coming up Celtics.
We definitely breached the topic of like having a COVID party with the team, I think like about maybe 6 months ago or something like that.
Oh yeah.
Advisable, but I mean, yeah, the worst things could happen. Like the playoffs. Yeah. Getting it in the playoffs.
It's been a crazy year. Romeo Langford managed to notch a minus 11 in just 4.5 minutes. That's notable, I guess, statistically. I've really liked what we've seen from Romeo Langford in his short time back. I don't know, guys. Any thoughts on Romeo Langford or any other aspects of this game before we move on? I know I'm kind of clutching at straws at this point, but just curious to hear what you guys think.
Oh, I had one thought, which is that I keep hearing this narrative more recently. I was wondering your thoughts on it, that the Timberwolves are no longer Karl Anthony Towns' team, that Anthony Edwards is the face. And the whole time, especially as Scal was saying it, the whole time I'm thinking, are they like trying to like make this a reality so that the Timberwolves will trade Towns? Because I don't buy that really at this point. Edwards has been really nice, but Towns is still, he's averaging what, 25 points, 11 rebounds, 5 assists, 50, 40, 90. I mean, yeah. are they really, is that true? Is it really not his team anymore? Or are they just trying to make that a reality so they'll get rid of him?
Yeah, Edwards could be the guy in the way that Marcus Smart is the guy to us. Like that, not like Marcus Smart is not our statistical or even impact leader. You know, I know like he's synonymous with winning plays and everything, but really it's mostly Tatum and Brown making the winning plays. But Smart's kind of the captain. I think that Anthony Edwards could be seen as an emotional leader in that kind of sense as well. I don't know. What do you think, Jackson?
Yeah, he's really, I haven't watched him play like outside of like dunk highlights before. He's really good. But I think if they're trying to drum up the narrative that like Karl Anthony Towns like is wants out of Minnesota for like potential trade to Boston, or if that's like the long play or whatever, then you know, all right, I'm for it. Because I love Karl Anthony Towns. Holy shit.
Yeah. What would our trade package be? It'd be like, unfortunately, it'd be Time Lord, Pritchard, our lottery pick in case we miss the playoffs here. It'd be like, I don't know. We could put together a decent package at least.
Oh my god.
I don't know. I get the feeling they can be rinsed, but at the same time, yeah, it would still take a lot of like guys that I care about. So, but I think I'd be willing to do it for half downs, to be really honest.
All right, so just before we wrap up the game talk, I did have a comment here from Hurricane Herschel, who just said, shout out to Kemba for 2 very timely three-pointers at the end there. Jackson, you touched on that earlier. I should have read out this comment then, but I wanted to give this user a shout out because they were spot on with that comment. All right, we're going to take a very quick break and be back in a moment with the Reddit recap. Welcome back. This is the Reddit recap. We've just got the one post here today. It's by user Said Hot Dog, and the title of the post is, we need to keep our criticism in check on the Jays. It was posted a day ago. It's on the sub. Recommend reading it because there's some good discussion under what is kind of a lengthy post, and therefore I'm not going to read it all out, but essentially I guess the theme of the post is that we need to keep our criticism in check of Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum for a number of reasons. One, that they're young. Another, that Kemba Walker, you know, makes quite a lot of money and is taking up quite a sizable, you know, chunk of the pie on the team as far as like expectations and role and things like that. But also that we might just scare them away if we're mean to them, essentially. Players are, you know, notably more sensitive nowadays compared to back in the day. And just that there's quite a lot of reasons overall why we need to sort of dial back our criticism of our young superstars. So we'll start with you, Larbert. I'm just curious to hear what you think of this on, you know, whether or not we should feel free to let our criticisms fly, or whether we should be dialing it back, or just your overall thoughts on criticizing players in general.
No, I don't really like scapegoating anyone, and it does feel like they're out of face of our team now. So when we're struggling, people just want something to point a finger at, whether it's Brad Stevens or Ainge or the players. But, you know, it is good to step back and have perspective and realize that although we talk about this curse of IT, we've had these two young stars now on our team, both all-stars. Tatum was all NBA already. He just scored 53 in this game. Like, it's pretty, pretty awesome that we're in this position. I listened to the most recent podcast you did, Ben, that I missed while I was out, and you had Joe on, and he was talking about how, you know, if they're really as good as we want them to be, or we think they are, then we should be a better team. We should be making the playoffs, and you know, you shouldn't. That's not necessarily true. I mean, I not to disagree with Joe, but it's not necessarily true. There are teams that have had two all-stars, and if the rest of the roster is in turmoil and you just don't have a great system, or in our case, you've had lots of turnover, lots of injuries, or COVID-related injuries, whatever you want to call them, and lack of practice, and a young team, then yeah, it's not going to necessarily mean success. We're still a game over 500 at this point, which is nice, and we can still end up with the fourth seed. So yeah, I don't like when people try to act like they're failing, because they aren't failing. They're playing at a very high level. There's defensive lapses and there's little things you can point at, and maybe there's a little too much isolation in basketball, but just a little step back perspective, it's fucking awesome how good these guys are.
Yeah. With the criticism aspect, it's like it's all based on results, really. Like, they weren't getting this kind of criticism like as loudly as they were last year or in their second year, you know, when we were playing well and we were like a one seed and everything was pretty rosy outside of the playoffs. And I think given the size of the fan base, like, it's just going to get louder and louder if results are bad. Like, you can't tell me then, like, an alternate universe where the Lakers don't win the championship last year and LeBron starts to look washed, there isn't a section of that fan base that's like, get trade the fucker. Like, he's useless to us. So I think that's just going to happen. But yeah, I mean, I think most sensible fans, like, you know, are frustrated, but don't, you know, say anything absurd. But even if they do, it's like, you know, who cares? I think these guys are mature enough and buy into what they've got here to not be scared away. But if this like goes on for, you know, maybe a season or two more, then I think it would start to get to them. It would start to just not become fun anymore to a degree.
Yeah. It might partially also because it's just the reactionary social media era that we're living in. I mean, I was a hardcore fan during the entirety of Pierce's career, and they missed the playoffs 5 out of his, what, 9 seasons before the arrival of KG. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember him even getting criticized on the level that I see people like shitting on Tatum for a bad shooting night or something. It just seems like it's all the criticism is just a little more heightened. And I do get I understand the sensitivity where it's like, you know, Tatum and all these players are probably familiar with that. If they're on Twitter, or if they probably might check out Reddit every once in a while, just secretly, and it's possible. And if they see that, it might give them the impression that that's what the fan base actually thinks. I don't think that's the fan base in large. It's just a heightened emotional stance of a pocket of fans that are very loudly vocal on certain platforms. And I get it from I also get it from perspective, because I do think that this is an unpopular stance, but I do think it directly led to Kyrie leaving. And not saying that I wanted him to stay, I mean, whatever, but I do think that played a huge part of it. Both the media and the fans completely turning on that guy. It just, I couldn't imagine him staying at that point. So why would you stay when all you're seeing on Twitter is this guy sucks? We're better without him. So yeah, yeah.
He bought that on himself. He bought that on himself, but
to a certain extent, yeah. But I also think that, I mean, I could go down on, it's not worth talking about right now, but there was a point in time where it's like he was still very much probably undecided, but the fans had pretty much decided, you're out of here, get the fuck out of here, and then he left.
Yeah, the social media aspect is a really sort of interesting factor, and because, you know, I mentioned that comparison that people make, like Ainge, you know, made it on a podcast. He, like, the Celtics have an official podcast now, so we've got another competitor there, and Ainge was their first guest. Damn those guys with their guest getting power. And yeah, he made that comparison that, you know, players nowadays are more sensitive to the guys that he played with in the 80s, like, you know, Larry Bird, etc. But, you know, those guys weren't faced with constant social media barrages all day, every day, by just completely random people, you know, credentialed media people, typical casual fans and otherwise, all just sort of bearing down on them at all times with their takes. So it must be harder. I'm sure it is a lot harder for these guys to cop some of that criticism. But they're also getting paid a lot more. Even, you know, scaled to inflation, they are still getting paid a lot more than those guys back in the 80s. So you could argue that they're paid professionals, professional athletes who should be equipped to deal with this kind of criticism. And, you know, for me, like, a lot of people I think are the same. I'll watch games with my hands on the keyboard, ready to get those takes, like, flying out there into the Twitterverse. And the other day I was on Twitter and I think, you know, we were losing and Tatum put up yet another contested step back three that he missed and, you know, gave away yet another opportunity to pass the ball when the ball had been moving quite well when he was on the bench. It was very frustrating. And I replied to a Keith Smith tweet. He was calling people who were criticizing Jason Tatum morons, or at least referring to their moronic takes. And I was like, I agree that those takes are moronic, but you can't deny that Jason Tatum has been pretty inconsistent this year. And he, like, quote tweeted me and just put, like, his stats for the year, which are good, as they should be. And kind of, like, exposed me a little bit. And then a lot of people piled onto that tweet being like, yeah, like, F you, Celtics Reddit podcast. Like, how dare you criticize Jason Tatum? And I'm like, come on, guys. Like, it's not an argument. Like, he has been frustrating. Like, I'm not saying that he's been bad or that he is bad or he will be bad. I'm just saying that he has at times been frustrating to watch. And so I guess there's a lot to unpack there. Like, how do you define criticism? And is saying how you react emotionally to a player publicly, is that criticism, or are we referring to people saying that he should be traded? Is that criticism? So it's a sort of a sweeping broad term, but to close out my point, I think that fans should be free to throw out whatever criticism they see fit. I think that you should draw the line at getting personal or using just, like, straight up insults. I think you should draw the line there. But if you feel like a player should be traded, if you feel like a player should be benched or whatever it may be, I feel like with the platforms that we have now as fans, people should feel free to get that shit out there. I just think that's part of sports fandom. We know that. The players know that. I thought it was a mutual understanding, but a lot of people feel otherwise.
Yeah, Ben, I'm actually going to agree with you. After you said that and hearing you say that, of course, I'm not immune to doing that either. I've certainly called players scrubs and stuff like that. and I guess, yeah, I want to separate. I don't think that there's anything wrong with fans voicing their opinions. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I'm just saying personally, I don't think the blame should be on Tatum and Brown for this season.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's fair to blame them. But by all means, if you want to say whatever you want to say, say what you want to say. Of course, I've had my own past of saying stupid ass shit about players. But
it's so much fun, though. It's fun to say stupid shit.
My only hope is that if it is impacting the young guys, because, you know, they always, I was listening to Marc Maron once, and he said that he'll see like 1,000 positive tweets and then one negative one, and he'll just obsess over it. Yeah. And I think a lot of people like that. And I just hope that if the players are actually seeing any of those negative comments, they realize that's going to be there regardless of the team. It's not like it's just a Boston fan base thing. No matter what team they play for, if they're struggling, they're going to have fans that are going to be voicing their opinions like that. So just don't leave us. Don't leave us, please.
Yeah. It must be hard. It must be hard. Because it's not even like constructive criticism that you might get from an employer or, you know, a close friend or something like that. It's just like, blah, trash, blah. Like, it's not good. But, you know, it's par for the course for those guys. Brandi Cole, Jason Tatum's mom, tweeted out after Tatum's performance today, tonight, if you're in the States, "We don't want none of that fake love. Keep that same energy y'all had a few days ago. You'll know who y'all are." Sorry, I'm butchering that with my Australian accent. Hashtag always his biggest fan. Can't help but feel personally targeted by that tweet, Brandi Cole. But yeah, I mean, when players perform badly,
what have you done, Ben?
The pro criticism.
You got the internet against us now. I gotta look up these tweets you sent.
Well, you can say that we lit a fire under Tatum. He comes out, scores. Yeah. No, I'm kidding. I don't believe
allegedly
that at all.
He plays better when he's mad, right? So in mad some Tatum. Way, it's like we're motivating him.
Yeah. So. I don't know. I don't think it's kind of just one of those things, those concepts that the world will not settle on or agree on. But I personally think that as long as you're not directly insulting a player or, you know, going in too hard on them, then you should feel free to dish out whatever criticism that you like. Before we wrap this one up, I've just got in my notes here. There's two things to get to. Brian Scalabrine, I thought it was a good time to circle back on this because, you know, speaking of criticism online, a lot of people are out there, you know, saying, "Oh, I'm listening to the Timberwolves broadcast today because I can't handle listening to Scal," and that Mike Gorman is clearly sick of Brian Scalabrine. I happen to like Scal a little bit. Like, I know he's a little bit obnoxious at times and maybe sort of like undercuts Gorman's commentary role a little bit there by speaking too much, probably like I'm doing on this podcast, ranting way too much. But what do you think, Jackson? Scalabrine up or down?
I don't notice that all these people are like, "Oh, Mike Gorman clearly hates him and, you know, he's obnoxious and stuff." It's like, I mean, I might be able to see that from an opposing fan point's perspective, maybe even a neutral perspective, but as far as I'm concerned, it doesn't bother me at all. Like, I think the dynamic is good. I mean, he's obviously playing a character in some respect inspired by the likes of Tommy Heinsohn, you know, the passionate like Homer. So he's playing that. But I mean, it was fun to see them mix up the commentary a couple games ago. I think it was Mannix and Scal and then Grande and Scal. And Scal was like, in all of that. And so I'm not saying that Gorman's the problem, but like, I mean, it was refreshing to hear him with someone else then. So I wonder if it's just the combination of those two like grates some people.
Yeah, I do think it's still a narrative. I do see a lot of people on Reddit in particular and Twitter that for whatever reason are not a fan of Scal. I almost feel like it's the opposite of what you said, Jackson, when you said that his Homer takes. It almost feels like part of the problem is that it's not Homer enough. He's not like just like constantly defending the Celtics. A lot of times he's kind of impartial, which is not normally the brand for Celtics color commentators. Yeah. I wonder if people react to that, but yeah, go ahead. What were you saying?
Sorry, there was one instance today where I think like was when Anthony Towns like put his elbow, it looked like he elbowed Smart in the back of the head. And he's like, "Oh, it's definitely a player. Player two, he's out of here." And then like after like one replay, he's like, "Yeah, it's possibly a hostile act while traveling." Like it's like he cooled down, but like as upon seeing it, it was like he's out. So I mean, I get he does that, but yeah, no, he can never be Tommy Heinsohn. He'll never have that element or that legend. You know, he's kind of a meme. He's kind of a cult hero rather than a legend. So whatever his takes are, they won't get the same lens as someone like Tommy Heinsohn saying them, or Gorman for that matter.
Yeah, I just remember there was a moment in I think it was the last game where we got away with an 8 seconds or something. He's like, "Oh, Celtics got away with an 8 seconds." I'm like, Tommy would have never said that. He would never pointed out that we got away with something.
Yeah, Tommy's not even counting at that moment.
But but that's, you know, that's weird to me because I agree with you, Ben. Like when I'm listening to him, I think he does a solid job. I've never really had a problem with him as a color commentator. It seems like most people are upset with his post game. We've talked about that a bit, of him clashing with Abby. I thought you were gonna bring up Paul Pierce here because there was a rumor that maybe Pierce was going to come in.
It's very interesting you mentioned that, Lava 33. It's my next and final note on my little run sheet here. Paul Pierce. I don't need to explain why we're bringing him up, right? Everyone's seen the footage at this point, I'm guessing.
That's sad footage, yeah.
Yeah. I said this to you guys in our Slack, but you know, my wife gave me a framed, autographed Paul Pierce jersey that hangs very proudly in my living room. And I said to you guys that ever since he retired, Paul Pierce has been doing everything he can to devalue that gift, that very generous gift. I mean, I suppose we don't need to harp on too much about, you know, the incident, but yeah, I mean, with the Scal thing, do you think Paul Pierce, there's a chance there that he might, you know, slot in as the as Mike Orman's right-hand man?
I would say no. well, I don't know if he'd be a good fit for that, but I would love even a temporary or just like a guest appearance. I'd love to see him in the post-game show, because I feel like a lot of the things the fans are reacting to is that Abby has had to pit herself against Scal, and it's just a bad dynamic because one of them is like, you know, a player who spent 10 years in the NBA and obviously knows the game very well, and then Abby, who we all love but doesn't really know the game in the same way, and that's like an unfair dynamic to have those two debating with each other. Mm-hmm. What I'd love to see is Pierce come in along with Perk too and have them kind of be like the Charles Barkley, Kenny Smith, Shaq, and let Abby be the Ernie and just kind of push it forward. And I would love to see what happens when Scal has Pierce on the other end of him, you know, as opposed to Perk. Perk, of course, was a starter. Scal wasn't, but Perk's not the level of Pierce. I'm just really curious to see if he would like act as like, you know, confident and like arrogant that people say he does if he had Pierce on the internet and end of him, you know, debating with him. That would be really fun to see. So I'm hoping that at the very least they try to get him on, do some guest spots, because that'd be fun watching.
Yeah, he, as far as an analytics goes, like, he just I don't like listening to him talk. It's just that feels very unnatural. But if it was in like the Perk kind of role that he has now, and you could see that dynamic, that would I think NBC Boston should definitely explore that. I think he would be open to it too. So if that's the case, then yeah, I'd be well for it.
Yeah, I like him as the regional television Charles Barkley. I think that's his lane.
Yeah.
I was a little worried about Paul Pierce, to be honest, because he had obviously the IG live and then some subsequent like posts on Instagram and Twitter, and it seemed a little midlife crisis-y, if I'm being honest. It just
a little Stefan Marbury vibes. That's what
yeah,
I was
exactly.
Slightly. Is he gonna start eating Vaseline on camera? What's going on, Paul?
I hope not.
What's going on?
I love Paul Pierce. I love Paul Pierce. He's my favorite player, like, ever. And a little worried about the guy. Sort of a sharp left turn, really, for him. And, you know, he's got a family. Not a great look. So I hope that whatever he does next is a sound, well thought out, hopefully well advised, I hope that he's got good people around him, decision. And that, you know, hopefully, let's be honest, that decision is joining us on this podcast. yeah, I don't know.
Yes.
Call it a stepping stone. Career stepping stone. Anything else you guys want to add before we wrap this one up?
Yeah, on the Pierce thing, it is kind of his brand to a certain extent at this point. Didn't he invest in some CBD line or like called The Truth or something? Like him smoking weed on camera, obviously, the only thing, I mean, we don't have to get into it too much, obviously, it was just kind of a bad look during a pandemic and all that, and I can see Disney not being happy with it, but it just, you know, just to maybe ease your concerns a little bit, Ben, yeah, maybe that's just kind of his brand now. He's just kind of like, you know, the weed smoker, and that's Paul.
Yeah.
So come on our podcast.
Yeah, look, I think that's a pretty good place to wrap it up. There's been enough discourse on the Paul Pierce situation, but I guess our notion there is that we just want what's best for him, and hopefully the next decision is a good and successful one.
He can replace me as the American correspondent. That'd be great. On the podcast.
No, we wouldn't do that. All right, that's going to do it for this one. We will be back with another pod in a week or so. We've actually got the Nuggets coming up on Sunday night, Monday morning if you're in Australia. You've listened to this podcast for any amount of time, you'll know that I'm, you know, currently shitting my pants about the likely outcome of that game. My Nuggets friend, shout out to Spicy Dice Paradise, is very smug at the moment with the MVP frontrunner, Nikola Jokic. It's kind of a nightmare scenario. Guy's been spamming me about Nikola Jokic for years now, and now it's sort of like coming to fruition for him, and not having a good time. But anyway, the Nuggets coming up, and we'll be back.
We beat him in the last game, right? So...
Yeah, a lot has changed since then. A lot has changed, so we'll see. But look, we'll be back with another pod sometime after that game or sometime later in the week. We'll see. Larbird 33, Jackson, love your work, guys. Thanks again.
Thanks so much.
Until next time, go Celtics. Peace.